This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 229 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
I'm good. I'm healthy. I guess you're a little under the weather.
Yeah, you could say that. I think I caught this year's flu bug. I don't seem to be as bad as other people, but, you know, it's... I got to get healthy. Sunday, my Eagles are in the Super Bowl, and hopefully they will kick the ass of the Pats. So I've got to get healthy for those parties this weekend. But and I was disappointed because I was going to go shoot the moon last night with some friends, and I couldn't do that. So I'm looking forward to a good show, but I apologize, everyone, if I'm going to be low energy tonight because I'm doing the best I can.
All right, David. Well, we'll see if we can amp up the energy on this end so that we average out to our usual level.
Well, I think with that, we should get started. Well, our first story comes from theregister.co.uk. Teamsters Union says no to UPS drones. No parcel drones, no robo-trucks. Teamsters Drivers Union delivers its demands to UPS. Well, I guess eventually this was going to come up, Max, that we've got people afraid that the robots are going to take away their work.
That's right. And this is a big group, too. The labor union that we're talking about here with UPS covers 260,000 union workers in North America. So this may turn out to be kind of the test case. But yeah, as you said, it's entirely predictable, I think, that we start to talk about package delivery by drone. And if your job is package delivery, the first question you're going to ask is, what happens to me? And if you're part of a labor union, your union is certainly going to be motivated to minimize any negative impacts on the dues-paying membership. And it's not just here, too, David. I think, you know, it's the same issue with driverless automobiles and trucks as we sort of seemingly march closer to that. We hear quite often that the first implementation would most likely be in large trucks, and we have these autonomous semis barreling down the highway. Well, there are an awful lot of truck drivers who are probably just as interested in what's happening there as the package delivery people are. This is a tough one. This is a very tough one. I'm very curious to see where UPS takes this.
Boy, I mean, it's history repeating itself. It always seems to be that there's always some union that there's always some progress that occurs and a union is fighting it. From people doing factories, you know, in the 1800s, just all sorts of things. Yeah, UPS is going to want a rock and a hard place. I wonder, though, Max, does Amazon have Teamsters as unions or is it a non-union shop? Since UPS is a union shop, it does get tenuous when you have a non-union shop like Amazon, they are non-union for delivery, where they don't have to worry about this issue. So it's imperative for UPS to get their members on board, you know, and their act together if they're going to compete, because unions can hinder progress as well as promote progress. So I guess the Teamsters need to work with UPS, and they need to understand that there are going to be non-union shops that are not going to have to worry about this issue.
The comeback that you frequently hear from the the side that's looking to automate is frequently that, well, we just need to put people in different kinds of jobs. So maybe they're not doing the kind of work that gets automated, but then that creates other jobs supporting the automation or, you know, doing whatever. But that's kind of a hard sell with labor, usually, because it's easy to say that, well, we'll take this person who drives a delivery truck today, and then we'll replace him with some automation, or her, and then we'll retrain them to do some other job. Well, that doesn't happen easily, and it's not always very successful. So this is kind of an example of one of the social issues, I think, that comes up with the march of technology. And certainly, yeah, over the last 100 years or even a little bit more, we've seen this over and over again. But we're at a point where I really wonder if the mood of the labor is going to, you know, allow a transition to take place. So I think this is kind of a crucial time. I thought that perhaps cargo delivery was, you know, where we would see the first battleground, but maybe this will be it. It's hard to say. Perhaps UPS has some other kind of concession in mind, something that they can offer to try to, you know, mitigate the demands of the union. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Now, we should mention that these discussions between the Teamsters Union and UPS are very early discussions, and they'll continue right up until July, as I understand it. So this is kind of the first round, or one of the early rounds in the conversation. A lot more to come.
And Max, you and I are going to become part of the IDU, the International Drone Operators.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll start a drone operators union, maybe, huh?
We joke, and it's tough to talk about, and I'll be honest to all of our listeners, it is tough to talk about unions, pro and con. I think Max and I have done a fairly decent job trying to present both sides, and we don't want to come off anti-union or pro-labor, or so. It's just a fact of life, and this is the first time we've run across this, but it will come more often, and we'll try to be as neutral as possible on the subject matter. So, how's that for a disclaimer, there, boss?
No, that's good, and it is difficult to, you know, kind of keep your personal feelings out of this topic. I mean, every time, you know, like you say, David, we've had you and I, as well as others, have had conversations about unions and what's going on in aviation with them. Feelings are very strong. And so I understand it. And I mean, in past life, I've never been in a union, but I have I've had employees who are union members, familiar with how at least some unions operate. And we'll try to keep it neutral. At this point, though, I mean, my big takeaway from this is that I think it's a social issue that's somewhat larger than just drones and just larger than Teamsters and larger than UPS. But this might be just the first skirmish.
Well, let's move on to something. This is from PRNNewswire.com. Aurora Flight Sciences and Socionext developed radar-enabled collision protection solution for drones. And it's tiny.
It is tiny.
Which is really good.
Yes, it's like not much bigger than the size of a nickel. This is the radar flight control module, or RFCM. And it's a single chip radar, a 24 gigahertz radar, that also includes range measurement software. And this radar can detect multiple objects, objects in open spaces. It can target distance and speed. You know, when I first saw this headline, David, the radar enabled for small drones, I mean, I had no idea that radar systems could be this small. But if the board is the size of a nickel, I'm sure it doesn't require a whole lot of power. And that's ideal for this kind of an application, I guess.
Well, that's the interesting part. I wonder how much power it requires. The chip may be small, but for what it does, I wonder how much power it involves. Now, Aurora Flight Sciences has been around for a while, and this is important technology. We've talked about miniaturization, and primarily we've talked about it as far as batteries go, but a sense and avoid technology like this makes it really nice to employ it easily, and it fits the requirements. It does a really nice job and is very lightweight. Now, if we could only get ADS-B in general aviation to be something like this, and maybe maybe the UAS industry will get ahead of the ADS-B industry out, and their technology advances will help general aviation and biz aviation with their ADS-B issues with the FAA. So this is pretty cool. We have a press release for the chip as a PDF that you can download, and you can do that through our website, which would be theuavdigest.com/229.
That's right. And here in this project, Aurora Flight Sciences is collaborating with a Japanese company. I think it's pronounced Socionext Incorporated. That's a shortening of the full Japanese name. This company is, it's known as a system on a chip company. They have international offices around the world. They're relatively new, having been formed in March 2015 from former business units of Fujitsu and Panasonic. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more from this company.
I'd like to follow up on this one because this is, I'd love to see them start implementing. And I know that there's a bunch of people out there flying professionally who would love to get their hands on this technology. So hopefully we'll follow up and we'll see some more testing and technology coming out of this.
All right.
Okay, for every drone, there's an equal and opposite anti-drone program, correct?
That's right.
We're pretty sure that Newton's law applies to drones.
That's right.
HSToday.us, DHS Saver, Program Issues Counter-Drone Procurement Guide for Emergency Responders. You know, emergency responders, they're desperately wanting drones, but they're also wanting to keep drones out of the way. The emergency responders or our first responders want both technologies.
And this comes to us from the Department of Homeland Security, their National Urban Security Technology Laboratory. And this SAVER program, S-A-V-E-R, that's the System Assessment and Validation for Emergency Responders program. And what they've done here is conduct a market survey of these counter unmanned aerial systems and have produced a report. It's a 19-page report. And again, we'll have a link to that document in the show notes. It was actually issued last year in September 2017, but this article is just coming out. And the report is intended to assist emergency responders in identifying useful products, and they have 13 systems identified in this report.
Ranging in price from a mere $7,500 to $1.9 million, that would be U.S. dollars. But in the report are 8 systems that can track, classify, and mitigate small UAS, which would be jammers, 2 systems that can track, detect, and classify but do not mitigate, i.e. do not jam, and 3 systems that can mitigate small UASs, i.e. bandwidth jammers and or netting. I noticed that Falcons and Eagles are no longer included as weapons of choice in the anti-UAS field.
That's right. I think that program was terminated, I think, for the safety of the Raptors. This report is, it's not too long. It's a 19-page report, this market survey. And, it does include a wide variety of different kinds of devices and systems. It's by no means a complete list. And I think a lot of the work for this was done a little while ago. So I think that there are many more companies involved in providing these kinds of systems.
But in all fairness, it's a start. But it's just interesting that, you know, every time we come up with a UAV, there's some other people coming up with an anti-UAV. So good old modern technology and warfare.
The report does warn towards the end of it that you need to be aware of applicable federal and state laws and policies, which is true. You don't want to just go out and start procuring these kinds of systems, particularly things that jam radio frequencies, because you have to check and make sure that that's something that's permissible where you're located and for the kind of operation you are. If you're just a private individual or organization, that may be more problematic. If you're a public service agency, that may be a little bit different. But again, you just can't go out and purchase these and start using them without, in some cases, violating local laws.
Or federal laws, because you're taking down an aircraft, according to the FAA. So yeah. One wonders, you know, this is the Department of Homeland Security. I hope they actually talk to the FAA about what the rules are. Hmm. Well, our next one circles back to our first story. This is from spectrum.iee.org, which is the International Electrical Engineers. AI-powered drone mimics cars and bikes to navigate through city streets. You know, I read this the first time, Max, and I went, having been in New York, one of the things I hate most driving in New York, at least in Manhattan, is bicycle couriers. that was my initial instinct. Sorry to any bicycle couriers that might be listening to the show, but them bobbing and weaving between all the cars, I got a bad feeling about this one.
Well, what they've done here is create something called DroneNet, D-R-O-N-E-T, DroneNet. And researchers have developed a drone that can fly autonomously through city streets. Now, typically, for those kinds of applications, what we've seen in the past is the drone has lots of sensors and a lot of onboard computing power in order to detect its surroundings, map its surroundings, and then fly autonomously through them. Well, this is completely different. This is neural networks and machine learning. And what they did is they trained the drone using data sets created by cars and bicycles traveling through city streets. What the software is able to do, what the neural network is able to do, is learn the rules of the road. So you don't specifically tell the drone what to do in different circumstances. Based on this accumulation of massive amounts of data, it learns what the rules are. And it's very effective. There's a video that they have, and we'll have this link in the show notes, and it shows the drone. It maybe is traveling down the street. It can follow the curves of the street, and then if someone is standing in the middle of the street, the drone stops if the person's blocking the path or the vehicle or whatever, or navigates around it. And it does that because it knows that you don't run into things. And it knows what the rules of the road are. I think this is really an amazing kind of a concept. You have to watch this video. I think it's pretty impressive.
DroneNet is awfully close to Skynet. And I've seen way too many Terminator films. No, actually, I jest, but this is the kind of technology they're going to need to do drone delivery, you know, or package delivery, and kind of like bad cartoons from the 60s and 70s where everyone's going through the stoplights, and then all of a sudden the light changes and the whole world stops while the other way goes. So if we've got a bunch of drones flying in the middle of a downtown city, it's kind of an amazing technology that they'll all sort of interact and stop and avoid people and places and buildings and learn the behaviors. You know, that's the machine learning is, I don't know, I get kind of scared by that, but that technology, but it's really kind of helpful and useful.
What they discovered also is that the navigation policy that was learned by DroneNet can be generalized to other situations. In fact, the same system allows drones to fly indoors or in parking garages, underground or multi-level parking garages, corridors, things like that. It's the same kind of, quote, rules of the road that enables these drones to fly autonomously in environments like that. Now, there's a project webpage associated with this that has software and data sets, and there's also a research page on deep learning, and we'll put those links in the show notes as well. The researchers have decided that they publicly release all of their data sets, all of the code, all of the trained networks. So this isn't being held close to the vest for some proprietary kind of future business endeavor. They're basically releasing this to the public.
Do they make a Raspberry Pi for you to integrate this with?
So take a look at it. It's some of the math and some of the theory behind it is
well beyond me.
Yeah, a little bit beyond me as well. But the point of it is that using large amounts of data, there's a learning process that takes place, and that it doesn't require that the drone have a lot of environmental sensors, methods to navigate autonomously. It needs video, and it uses that to make its flight decisions. So really, really fascinating stuff. And check out the video, DroneNet, Learning to Fly by Driving is what it's called.
And our last story this week comes from thesun.co.uk. Driving license for drones supported by majority of Brits, while one in five call for a total ban. Wow, 20% of Britain wants drones completely banned. And this was a survey of 2,000 British adults, including 500 drone users in that. So one quarter of the survey. Interesting, Max. I kind of agree with the driver's license part, but we have that in here in the States. That would be an airman certificate. You know, they're 107, which is kind of a driver's license. I don't know what Britain has, but I don't know if we want 20% of the population saying that we shouldn't use drones at all.
Yeah, some of the statistics, some of the results of this survey are kind of interesting, and I'm not sure that all of the of what's reported here sort of hangs together. But for example, 37% of those surveyed said that the government should set up a body to manage drone ownership and possible licensing. 92% of the respondents said there should be restrictions on who can own a drone. 17% of the British public think drones shouldn't be sold to the general public at all.
Boo, hiss.
42%. This is people with poor eyesight. 42% of the Brits, it says, believe drones shouldn't be sold to people with poor eyesight.
Well, that rules us out, Max.
It sure does. But that's kind of an odd statistic.
This one was kind of disturbing. The last one we noted was 2/3 of drone enthusiasts said they had filmed a person or place without permission.
Mm.
Was it intentional or was it not intentional?
Yeah, yeah. And what kind of a place was it? I mean, if it was your neighbor's backyard, that's one thing.
That's creepy.
That's creepy. If it was at the city park, that's another thing. If it was out in the open country, that's something different again. So, yeah, I don't know what that is. But I guess one of the takeaways from this survey, or as it's reported here, is just the kind of the broad spectrum of opinions that the general public still has about drones. And I think you'll agree, David, that when we first started this podcast several years ago, the public perception of drones was one thing. What it is today is something different, but it's probably still not where it ultimately needs to be.
I wouldn't call this a takeaway as a positive survey. We've talked a lot, now I mind you that we need to have that 20% in Great Britain start listening to a podcast called the UAV Digest, where they constantly talk about drones for good. But there still is an underlying fear, I would call it, of UAVs.
Yeah.
And an underlying negativity that we still have a long way to go, even though, that being said, we've come a long way since we first started this show. But there's still an underlying negativity that we need to overcome, and I can understand that. And you don't get positive drone stories in the news. You get an aircraft had to be diverted at Heathrow because a drone was flying in the airspace. So there is a consistent negative to the general topic, where some of these drones stories, like the big drone story about the two boys that were saved by the drone, don't get out as much as the negative stories. It's a peeping, but that's the nature of news. News is always, we've got a long way to go, but you know what? I'm still optimistic. We're doing the right thing. Drones are cool. Drones are good. And there's going to be a lot of, and people will change their opinions over time. People used to say that those mean, steaming, belching, gasoline thing coaches that were terrorizing everybody were going to ruin all the horses and all the carriages. Well, when was the last time you saw a horse and carriage, other than maybe middle of Pennsylvania and Amish country, traveling down the streets, and you do see cars everywhere. So technology always eventually wins.
All right. Well, I think we'll wrap this one up, David. Let you get some well-deserved rest and maybe some hot soup. But we want to thank all of you for listening to episode 229 of the UAV Digest. Find us at the UAVDigest.com. As always, if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, you'll find them at the UAVDigest.com/229.
And of course, if you want to interact with us, and we are a interacting kind of community, you can join our Slack team. You can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, or you can be part of our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/theuavdigest, and on Twitter feed, which is @UAVDigest. And of course, you can leave us some feedback. We appreciate it if you'd leave it on Stitcher or Google Play or Apple Podcasts. That way other people can find us. And you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. But most of all, we want to hear from you. So send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest. Or if it's something you want to see, Max and I both have individual addresses. So it would be David@theuavdigest and Max@theuavdigest. So send us some of your photos and some of your stories, especially international stories. We don't get to see them here in the States. And don't forget, we're always looking for a video of the week to share with everybody. So if you shoot something, send it to us. So with that, this is David going to bed in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.